13th, we had Honorable Shiva Mayine Mukhati Masala Masami to be Sitka was absent. So they were relying on the members to reflect on it. Mayine, thank you. Is comfortable to move the minutes?
Yes. Focusing on removal of invasive alien plants,
it is important to mention the exceptions that affect the success of the hearing process, like when the information is broken down according to provinces. We do have currently in provinces like Umalanga, for instance, where we are currently looking at exiting the current contractors. Obviously, those challenges have had an impact on the program and the productivity of the program itself. But this is just an overview of the hearing process in the previous year. Achievements with regards to the Waiting on Fire. Again, in the categories that we can see there, and the number of jobs, present day jobs, and the capacity building, which I believe is the concern of the committee at this point in time, and the number of direct beneficiaries from the program itself. I will be talking more on that at a later stage. Expenditure, I think we dealt with it in a summarized form, but this is just showing expenditure per everything. And again, as you can see, Mpumalanga and Western Cape have the lowest expenditure compared to compared to other provinces. Jobs created and the cost per day. Again, this is broken down in terms of movement. We're now looking at the planned activities for this current financial year. There is a conscious effort to look at better managing the program so that we get more jobs per day. Looking at efficiency, dealing with the operation, managing the operational cost of the program, bringing them down so that out of the limited budget we have, we allocate more money to the work itself and create more jobs. So there is that process that is currently happening within the program to see how we can increase the effectiveness of the program itself. These are the projections in terms of jobs to be created under the Working on Fire program and Working on Woodland. And again, these are broken down in terms of women, youth, disabled, etc. Progress to date. As you can see, Mpumalanga again is showing the lowest percentage actually across the network. But this is really speaking to some challenges are relating to the climate, not the climate, but the weather conditions in some cases where they have not, the provinces have not been able to start with the job because of the weather conditions. But according to the projections, and we have interrogated because our CFO insists that we get the progress on expenditure on a monthly and in fact on a almost on a by on a fortnightly basis to track expenditure. So there has been an analysis and there has been concerns raised that currently the expenditure is low. But it's not something that we are really worried about because we understand where those expenditures are coming from. Again, in Mpumalanga, we are dealing with the exiting of the contractors. We're looking at other mechanisms of making sure that that is done in the, because currently it is causing serious problems and disruption in the program itself. Yeah. The challenges regarding the program. Funding for the program is a challenge, and this year again, in the four options that we submitted to National Treasury and looking for additional money, unfortunately we couldn't put this problem because there were just many other competing needs. For instance, the need for us to get staff to do the to perform the functions in the department, something that we've been complaining about year in and year out, and the presidential program of Fruit Tree that our minister discussed with the president, we require funding for that.
And we also have core programs that have up to now been funded by the donors. So we think it's about time that Treasury gave us money to perform those functions. I'm mentioning this because if you look at the importance of this program, you would say it should be number one on the list. But if again you look at the overall efficiency within the department, if we do not get funding for the programs that I have just mentioned, we will also be in trouble. So we will have to look at other creative ways of getting additional funding. We're hoping that since this program has been identified as the presidential kind of priority, we may be able to access funding. The constraints, capacity constraints, Chair, that you are given is really something that can be managed at this point in time. Communication on the program, especially the understanding of not only the objectives of the program, but you know, it's very hard for people to accept the fact that they can only participate in the program for a limited period. Exiting people out of the program is a serious challenge. Skills development is a challenge, and here, even though the program itself training is an important integral part of the program, but we still experience challenges with the quality of contractors that we get. Collaboration and working together with other departments is a challenge. Not only other departments, and then even within the department, we're looking at ways of utilizing some of the benefits coming from the program to enhance, for instance, water services, sanitation delivery. So there is still potential really for improving effectiveness. Collaboration within the municipalities. One initiative that the program has taken is to initially this program was driven by the department, but now there are moves towards making sure that municipalities do participate. And not only participate, but make sure that the program itself is part of their local economic development strategies, which is something very good. And they also come in handy then when we're talking about beneficiaries, job creation. So it's really ideal it should be, and this is where we're moving towards, should be an integral part of the municipality in local economic development initiatives. Inadequate monitoring and evaluation, it is something that we will have to improve on to make sure that we develop the relevant key performance indicators that will inform us whether we're really making a difference in terms of developing skills, creating jobs, eradicating poverty. And of course, there's a lot of research that's required to inform how the program can be improved, especially the possible impact of climate change and how the program then should structure itself so that it is able to better deal with those challenges. And the other challenge that the program is facing is the role of the landowner in privately owned land and the role of the municipalities in terms of gearing up. There's still no ownership in that regard, and it is believed that municipalities should take responsibility somehow, find creative ways of making sure that they take responsibility for invasive plants in their area. However, if you look at the challenges facing municipalities, really, would they is really one of their priorities. It should be their priorities, but I'm sure they are much more on between priorities at this stage. Chair, looking at the way forward, as I did indicate earlier on, that we're looking at improving the program, making sure that we create more sustainable jobs. And really, I think the focus here is not only sustainable jobs, but small businesses. Because currently employment opportunities are limited to a certain period. So the idea would be to make sure that enough money is invested in creating a value-adding industry you know, because that, then you really dealing with a sustainable job opportunity. To strengthen intergovernmental relations, working with other departments, I suppose that should be a continuous challenge. I think it applies to all other programs in government. The management of the data will have to be improved, and this also speaks to the improvement of monitoring and evaluation, and of course, within the fiscal sector. At a later stage, we'll be talking about skills development in both programs and sharing with you what some of the things are. At this stage, I would like to hand over to Guy to deal with waste management. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Umberto, Chairperson, and honorable members. I'm going to just first of all start with some further information around working for water and then go on to working on fire. I just share this with the Chairperson. Something that you need to highlight is the set of recommendations. I think we sometimes get so caught up in the fact that we have these invasive avian plants in our country and we're trying to deal with them, that we neglect to think about the things that are still coming in and the things that are in the still spreading around the country. So we still have this absolute bombardment of species coming into our country. And I'll give you a statistic at the end of this section of the presentation that will illustrate that most dramatically. This is a plant, a waterweed, one of the world's worst waterweeds that we found 2 years ago in the Pongola Float Dam. It's still confined to that dam, rather surprisingly, and we are trying to have a multi-departmental approach to containing this on that dam and perhaps even eradicating it. It covers 700 hectares, which is a big area, the equivalent of 1,400 soccer fields, for example. And it's a difficult thing to kill. It's in many other parts of the world, it's an invasive too. But if this thing escapes into our water bodies, it could have the same sort of effect as water hyacinths would have. And we're talking billions of rands of impact over the long term. And it's just one example of invasive. This is an extraordinary set of slides, which some of you may have seen before, but this is something that came in through this ornamental trade into the country in the 1940s, called Cobralina or Tripoli. And spread now into various parts. And these are slides taken in Kukui Game Reserve. And when you look down at that, if you're driving around, it's quite heavy, so it could even notice. And if you're looking for your elephants and your rhinos and all your charismatic species of those for the tourists, it looks green, it looks good. But all of that is chromolina. So whilst it looks okay, there's actually no food substance there for the animals that the tourists actually come to our country and local tourists go to look at. And in the top right-hand side, you can see this brief painting there, the yellow. That was in 1985, the level of invasion of chromolina in Cthulhu Ferozzi complex. In 1998, you can see how it spread. 2002, and we're saying within 10 years it would completely engulf the crop. When it does that, that should mean there'd be no food for animals to eat, there'd be no animals, there'd be no animals, there'd be no tourists, no jobs. We're talking 3,000 jobs lost and 100 million just from that land, from that park alone. But of course it doesn't just affect the park, it affects the park is up there. It affects all of the low-lying parts of KwaZulu, but it also affects Eastern Cape and Swaziland, Mozambique, Mpumalanga, and going up through the Mpopo to Zimbabwe. So a massive threat to life and livelihoods. And among the most affected are the resourceful farmers who don't have the capacity and the resources to take on an invasion like this on their land. Then you have things like Dentana, which is another poisonous invasive that is affecting cattle. And if you put chromolina and Dentana together in KwaZulu, that's what it looks like. Now, it won't be exactly like that because there are resource farmers, the plantations, the sugarcane people, who are able to keep it off their land to a degree, although it costs some money, of course. But it's the rest of the land that is just so vulnerable to invasion. I just want to show you that is what it was in 2002, and that's what it is today. So we have, in partnership with KwaZulu Provincial Department of Agriculture and Environmental Affairs, we have put a massive effort into trying to contain the threat of chromolina, not only in the park, but that is the basis. That we had on the success that we're having against chromolina. This is something those of you from the Kaoping area, called the pompon weed, that will be coming into flower in the next couple of months. Poisonous to stock. What I've often said to people is you look at that picture, and as far as the eye can see, it can be pompon. And so it means that the productive use of that land, either for stock or for gain, is just completely lost as a result of this invasion. And because it's pretty, people are taking it. So the Mpopo and Mpumalanga, Free State, all the grasslands, KwaZulu, they're all very, very vulnerable to the spread of this particular form of cancer. And I think you should think of invasive. They take over and they destroy the community. And that's the grasslands that the pompons can actually invade in. What I should just mention also, because we've got some very disturbing statistics on it, there's a thing called American bramble, you know, like the berries that you get for jam, that is invasive in the Gothenburg area. And that is currently covers an area that would have supported 68,000 stock units. Sorry, 68,000, 17,000 stock units, 68,000 goats or sheep, as an example. Those are the stock of resource quality. And this thing again is spreading. And there's just so many examples, unfortunately, that we have of this, that we need to address and prioritize and make sure that we focus on the best returns on investment that we can get. The pandemic also did mention the impact of climate change. And this slide shows over thousands of years through analysis of where they drill down into the last 40 years shown on that graph, this incredible increase in carbon. And one of the impacts it has, and this experiment shows it so well, it's actually an indigenous species, it's this, it at 180 parts per minute, you can see on the left-hand side the size of the roots and the size of the shoots on the top. On the right-hand side, going up to 700 parts per minute, you can see how much bigger they are. And the impact of that, both for bush encroachment, so the grasslands being overtaken by, and the productivity of grasslands being overtaken by woody species, but also, and quite clearly for water, when you've got that much roots on the right and left, that much on the left, you're going to suck out a whole lot more water, and with the evapotranspiration from having so many more leaves on the right compared to the left. So this has very, very serious implications for water management. And this is one of our worst endangered called Prosopis longicheek in the Northern Cape. And this is, you can see it along the water areas, and these things are absolutely sucking dry the groundwater in the Northern Cape areas and in other parts, the other dry parts of Botswana, Namibia and elsewhere. And the implications of that with climate change is that these things are going to get bigger, the roots are going to get deeper and more efficient. And the implications for farming are certainly horrendous. And we have to start biting the bullet and saying, do we want to try to bring in a biological control agent that will kill this problem? Or do we want to continue to turn it to a few farmers who like the fact that the products are very good for stock feeding? Because you're actually talking about the collapse of the system here. And climate change, in combination then with invasives, is going to be a huge, huge impact that will happen. This is what I wanted to mention, and it's just the most startling figure. Prior to human arrival, every 25 to 50,000 years, a new species, farm species, would arrive. Now, every 18 days, you're getting a plant. Now, to give an example of that, if you had a flu virus get into your body, because it's an invasive as well, it would be the equivalent of having it something like every 10 seconds. That's the increase. And that is indicative of how we're moving things around. And maybe you've been following in the papers, but the interlinkages between these things, some of the human health diseases, and just remember HIV, AIDS, cholera, TB, all these things are actually invasive. So the principles that we're dealing with here are exactly the same as we do in community health. And many of the new invasives that are coming in, human health disease, have links to environmental invasives and agricultural invasives. So when you start seeing Ebola virus as a potentially massive thing, when you hear the World Health Organization saying that 320 million people, the biggest carnage that will ever happen in terms of human loss of life on Earth. 320 million people could die through bird flu, which is fatal. I mean, we're talking things of extraordinary consequence for life and livelihood. And we need to get far more serious about our prevention measures, which will then deal with agriculture, with water, with biodiversity, health impacts of invasives. And just an estimate that already invasives are causing the equivalent of $1.4 trillion loss. And whether it's actually true or not doesn't really matter, because it's a very difficult thing to calculate all the costs, as you'll see when we talk about the fire impacts a little later. But the point is, that no matter whether it's 5% or 3% or 7%, it has a very considerable impact already. But the thing about invasives is they get worse. They're already moving around, as I indicated, at unprecedented levels. And here we have a you know, most of them actually haven't started having the impact that they will otherwise have. So, you know, when people look at Working for Water, too often I feel they're looking at Working for Water and saying, how many 13 days are we achieving right now? Now, those 13 days are vital, as you know, about. But we must think about what the consequences will be if we don't do this work. And we're talking about really, really significant losses in employment, huge health implications, huge impact for poverty, huge impact for social stability. And I would be as bold as to say, and I wear a hat for Working for Water and Working on Fire too, that I don't know that there's a better return on investment in Working for Water in the long term for what we are up against, not only in this country, but in many other countries. And one of the things we have to think about, and particularly you have to think about as our leaders, is what is happening to our neighboring countries as a result of species that come into this country and go and invade in their country. Because it's happening big time. South Africa is the entry point for most of the invasives that are affecting the future or other places. We don't have our resources. We don't have the kind of Working for Water capacities that we have. And part of this then does say we have to get serious about our legislation. You know that we've been waiting for over 2 years to get our Biodiversity Act regulations through. Those are not through and not contested. But agriculture is pushing through its regulations on the Conservation of Agricultural Resources Act. That will be enormously beneficial for Working for Water for the control of plants, but it won't do anything about the prevention of new things coming into the country. And as our legislators and leaders, I really appeal that this be something that you look at very, very seriously. Because, again, you're talking actually about how many people are going to die. I mean, it's really as crude as that. From the decision-making things that we actually do or don't do at this stage. And I want to just also show you one of the flagship projects that we have within Working for Water and Partnership within the town that we're in, CCSOLA, and state-based organizations, traditional leaders and others. We are cutting down trees, as you know. These are pine trees, and pine wood is certainly very useful. We cut down the trees that other people don't use. And what we're doing is we are cutting them into what are called canks on the piece of wood on the on site. And what we also do is, if I can point to this, but when you cut this into squares, when you cut it into square bits, you have the edge there. We are looking to use all these things as best we can. So one of the things that we are trying to do with the offcuts there is to make benches that we can then put attention PowerPoints to places where people need to sit down that often have no provision. So in all these things, we are directed by our pro-poor focus of these programs. But the main thing then is cutting them into these camps that they call, which are then put through various machinery that we have bought. This program, this project was put forward to the World Bank's Development Marketplace Award, and actually, I believe, came top for innovation out in the world on 2,700 applications. And we then cut them into the wood, we put them in the kiln, we dry it, and then we are making coffins, what we call eco coffins, coming out of the wood. These are very high quality coffins, solid wood coffins, and so we are creating jobs. We've created 68 jobs in making these. This is the cost. So you can see the kind of quality of what is coming out here. But the whole purpose of this is to reduce the cost of bereavement of the work. And so what we are doing is working with state-based groups, traditional leaders, NGOs, and others who will do the distribution because we're not in the funeral business. And try to make sure that these get to the poor at the lowest possible price, and try to deal with the costs of funerals, which are so crippling for many people. And people are vulnerable, as we all know, at time of bereavement. So people might have an insurance package. That insurance package might be worth 5,000 or 10,000 rand, and you can be sure that many of the undertakers, not all of them, but many of them will say, don't worry, we'll look after it for you, and they will spend the whole 10,000 rand on an elaborate funeral. And what we're showing is that these coffins, and what we advocate is the most simple coffin, the fund sells at 300 rand, going up to these ones that's 420 and that's 440. The casket, we have made more expensive, partly to cross-subsidize, so it's 1,990. But a casket like that, if you buy it at the moment, say, will be 10,000 rand. And for just the 300 rand thing, people are often paying 2,000, 2,500 rand for it. So what we're trying to work with the faith-based people is to say, you provide the partial support to the bereaved. All we have to do is work with the undertakers around the storage of the body, or even work with our own collections of government. And I must admit, I've never ever come across something that has made me more depressed than the funeral industry and some of the things that are going on. And then we need the transport of the body and then the coffin. And we can bury a person with dignity in a high quality coffin for maybe 500 rand, depending on how long the body needs to stay in mortuary. And the rest of the money could be then used by the family for things that they need. And it's about also getting the, and again I think a really important role for yourselves as legislators, to change this notion of funeral insurance into life insurance. Because that's actually what it should be. If you've got 10,000 rand and you can bury someone for 500 rand, then you've got 9,500 rand to spend on things that you need. And particularly obviously we have the animals of course. So this is a really inspirational thing that we are only doing in close to this moment. But it's something that could roll out and it's completely self-funding at this stage. I mean, we have to buy the capital equipment through the World Bank funding and through significant funding from CAPES and the DAA. But it's one of the things that we have on our list that we would like to roll out. And we believe we could also, the Red Cross, for example, has indicated that they would be very interested in taking these coffins for use elsewhere in the world. And then we do, of course, make other value-added industries as Rebecca has mentioned. Just very briefly, from the figures, and I'm a figures person, so I like to look at figures and I like to interrogate figures and try to understand what's actually going on beneath those figures that somebody uses. And when you get a general figure that's saying, you know, X percent woman or X percent of excess care, we have over 300 projects in Britain. Now, you know that in anything that you have variation. And so I think our real concern is what is the variation that's going on? You have good projects, you have bad projects in your system. And our focus has to get down to trying to understand where are individual projects actually not working well and what can we do about them. But also to celebrate the things that are doing well. And one of the things that the management of Working for Water has introduced is what's called a flagship program. And they're getting each province to nominate based on KPI factors, best projects. And this was the winner from last year. But it's also a request to him, Jacob, that you consider attending this, because it really is inspirational to see some of the stuff that is going on. And people who were previously unemployed who come up the ranks to be project managers and are doing absolutely fantastic management jobs. So, you know, in all program, you have your ups and your downs, which here we're going to show you a very brief thing of an up. So this is the Leiden Book project, as you can see where it is, and I'm getting to very quick. They've done some very good planning as to where the investors are and where they need to work and how they're going to sequence their work. And you can see these figures, this is 0506. In the initial list, what they've done, so they set good targets and they achieve those, in fact, exceeded them. The expenditure aspects again, they've done very well on the hectares. And also, I think, important thing to remind you that with these programs, you can't just go and hear them and walk away. It's one of the things that whenever we start, if we get any money, we have to make sure that we can roll that out into the future years. Otherwise, we shouldn't stop because the things will just come back. It's like the doctors who are not following up with TB medication. So the big emphasis on follow-up is very important here. The performance is about 607. The employment figures and what they're showing there is achieving the target of 60% women. In fact, it's meant to be 60% wages go to women because that's a fairer figure. But this is the numbers. You can see the youth is much higher than the target. It's a very difficult thing and something where we've never really had the guidance as to how we should focus on the needs of the youth versus the needs of others. And then the target is 2% and they've achieved 6%. And it's certainly one of the ones I always look at. It's quite worrying how influential the individual project manager is because, you know, we have, with gender, for example, we are fairly standard. With disability, there's enormous differences between projects. The contracts that have been completed, in CARA, that's the legislation, so they're making sure that they're serving directors and landowners to make sure that the landowners do the work that they're meant to do. This is showing some of the invasions that were occurring, and the fact that they are now here at the bottom of their front picture and occurring is done on the right. Now, this is by the landowner, the Morgan itself. The training, I know this was something that you wanted, but I was very impressed in the presentation by the training and by the focus on health and safety, which is always a way. And then the social development aspect that they are doing. There's a dignity and a sense of organization that I got from this particular presentation that was certainly very inspiring for where we're trying to go. And a big emphasis on the exit strategies, you know, is something that really does concern us. So making sure that when these teams exit, that there are opportunities for people as far as we can. In the absence of the legislation that I've spoken to, we will not exit people successfully. Until we have good legislation, we can forget about thinking that we can exit people. And that is beyond our script. So, chairperson, those are just some additional pictures around the Working for Water. Just ever so briefly, for Working for Western, I just wanted to remind you that this is also your program. Working for Western is a partnership. It's administered through DEEP. The GRAC is a major player in this, and incredibly supportive of the program. If it wasn't for GRAC, we would have been in very serious trouble last year. The support that GRAC gave to the program. And I just want to show three slides to indicate why, with flooding that we have in the Eastern Cape, why veterans are so important. They have many other virtues. But here you can see indigenous vegetation in a wetland. They've been hit by a flood and it's been flattened, but it will come back. And what it does is it takes a whole lot of power out of the flooding. It has many other benefits around biodiversity, around retaining the water. As you know, wetlands are often called the kidney of the ecosystem. So it does all those things too. But what I just wanted to show here was in an area, this is on the Krug River, feeding into the Churchill Dam that supplies Nelson Mandela Metropole. That entire field was washed away because wetlands were damaged. And now, the productivity is lost with that, but as you know, the filtration implications for the dam, instead of having water in the dam, you've got silt in the dam. And we really need to focus a lot more on wetlands. We've got over 120,000 wetlands in the country. Working for wetlands is only dealing with 83 of them. So it's an almost insignificant number. And again, unless we get our legislation right and start using incentives and disincentives to get people to manage the things, like all things, if you can get in early, a stitch in time saves lives. And we very reliant on you to ensure that we have good integrated legislation and an integrated approach between departments. So good governance is absolutely essential. I think just very briefly, the statute of Working for Wetlands put in there, which stops the eating away of the wetlands through erosion, has meant that in these areas, resource poor farmers are able to farm there when otherwise they would not be able to. So, you know, in all these things, it's not just the jobs we're creating, it's the impact that we have on the lives of everyone. Hopefully targeting this work, I think, very important. So in discussion with Pandeka, we just thought we should mention this and ask that in future that Working for Wetlands be required to report to you on performance. It's a very good program, very well managed program, and it's supporting 2,020 people. Good morning. Could you indicate whether you'd like us to, would you like us to take questions on Working for Water before we go on to Working on Climate, or would you like to continue with the presentation?
Sorry, Gary and Sandeka, I got distracted with an old member who turned back to the committee that I got excited seeing him again. Sorry.
Thank you.
Welcome back. I wanted to suggest that what we do is, I was hoping that we could actually take everything up to 11 o'clock, and I'm sure take a quick break, and then we could then take in the questions and then go to the issue of the fire. So at the same time, I think it wasn't on fire.
This is from the slide that I saw, not a lot. No, it's just a series of slides, again, some inspirational stuff. It's important that our readers
why don't we try and finish your presentation on the Working on Fire as quickly as we can, because then we can break and then we can have some time to discuss the entirety of the entire faculty. So I know these things are very fascinating to you. I absolutely love it. You always said you waste time, unfortunately, in Parliament. So if you can just. But thank you very much.
Okay. Arthur and I will share this presentation. I'll just quickly go through these pictures. Many of you were part of the portfolio committee when we started the Ukubuka campaign. And when we started Ukubuka around the Table Mountain area, we adopted the Joe Slovo area, which was an informal settlement that had many bad times. We thought we had won. And I even wrote to Mr. Mandela, who was our patron, to say how we had stopped the fires that had caused so much damage. And literally the day after I wrote that letter, we had a fire there that lost 1,020 chapters. And clearly, we hadn't got it right. And it was the intervention of particularly Jan Heiner, the manager of Working on Fire, that has brought about taking the lessons from the forestry industry and applied them that has made the difference that you'll see there. What they've got is cameras that are taking photographs all the time of the Cape Flats area from high points. These cameras are taking pictures taken from the cooling towers. And what they do, and in the forestry situation, it just goes down and it takes 360. If there's a tree standing and it takes a photo, the next time it takes a photo, the tree isn't there. Then they know that perhaps somebody's chopping down trees that they shouldn't be chopping. So it's a security thing. But the big thing is for fire. And this is able to pick up fires in an artificial intelligence thing that has been alerted us if there's a fire. So you can see the time, 11:25, we've been alerted. We can tell us exactly where the fire is, so we can get down to the street level, exactly where the fire is. And then you have what's called a spotter plane, that just flies above the fire, and that directs all of the action around the fire. And so this is a close-up. 5 minutes later, we have the spotter plane over the shack fire, and you can see it starting. Now you can also see that the wind is blowing, and within 7 minutes the first of three fire engines arrive. So it's a much quicker response because of the system that you put in place. There you can see two of the fire engines, it was actually a third, but they haven't got their hoses off, and the intensity of the fire is now such that it's very, very difficult to get in there. And the implication is that all of the shacks, in fact, from the houses, certainly all of the shacks are going to burn down. And when they do, of course, you're talking about people who've got no insurance, no savings, are less so little, and risk their lives to save the little that they do have. So it makes it very, very difficult to fight these fires. Now, just underneath the arrows, you have the first of the Working on Fire bombers planes coming in. So it's coming in, that's the spray of the water and foam that is now being dropped onto the fire. It's a close-up, you can see the plane and the water coming down onto the fire. And that's the second bomber coming in. There's the third one. The helicopter takes longer to get there, of course, but once it does get there, it can fill up more easily and be slightly more accurate. And at 12:18, you can see we put out the shack. You can see the firemen and women inside there. So within roughly an hour, what could have been an absolute inferno, wiping out huge numbers of shacks. And they were called the angels from the sky. But these by one of the number of shacks lost was about 13 shacks. This is cherry picking. This is cherry picking. We can't fly at night, and of course we just happen to have these photos because the spotter was there. And so we can't say this is going to happen all the time, but the implications of this for the continued problems that we have of fire in settlements throughout the country. And we know, for example, the area called Nelson Mandela Metropole is very, very vulnerable. We know Alexandra and other places in Johannesburg are very vulnerable. So it's something that we would like to see being rolled out. That's on top of the impact that we have with the wildfires. So I think what I should do is hand over to Mpasa around that. With Working on Fire, the spent the school budget last year, people in the program are getting 22 days of work per month. That's a very important developmental consideration. And I think many of you have seen the workers, have spoken to the workers, and I would hope that your impression is the same as mind that this is having a remarkable impact on people's sense of self-worth. opportunity for exiting of these workers is very high. They are extremely fit, very well disciplined, and I think an absolute credit to our government. And I think not to forget, Working on Fire is a government program. It's a program that is co-led by between RAF and DPLG with AG and Speed and the provinces and others also involved. So we can go into the figures. If you'd like any figures, but maybe I should just hand over to a partner to carry on. Thank you.
Thank you, Guy, for the opportunity, and thank you to the Honourable Chairperson as well as to members of the Personal Committee for welcoming us and affording us this opportunity. I'm going to give a brief highlight of issues relating to transfer management, and my brief will mainly touch on progress with the implementation of the piece of legislation that we have out there, and will also reflect on fires that we experienced recently in the northern provinces of Mpumalanga, KwaZulu-Natal, Limpopo, the Free State, of course, as well as Eastern Cape. In terms of what provisional report do we have in terms of those fires? And I would also like to indicate that in terms of those fires, we do not have conclusive reports because assessments are still being carried out. But what we have here is basically what we came up with as Department of Water Affairs and Forestry, as well as the Department of Provincial and Local Government in the National Disaster Management Center. And I must also apologize that there is no presentation, or we haven't been able to hand out some notes on the input that I've been making here. So that's one area that is really well. From my side, it's because when I looked at the brief for today's presentation, I thought it would mainly be around the Work on Fire as well as the Working for Water program, and I would only prepare notes based on what the minister, two ministers of Water Affairs and Forestry, and that will be the issue in the near future. But I can also link the document for purposes of reference or actually arrange to make a copy now if possible.
The next
you were confused about the brief of the meeting today. But the brief was communicated that would include the aspects on the recent fires in South Africa. So I think let's hear your presentation, and I think it will still help if you can, apart from the document that you have there, so that you put something together, because we need to put it in our formal record, the presentation. So I think it will still help if you can still. Hopefully today, so give us something, but let's hear now.
Thanks very much, and once more, apologies. Yeah, in terms of the National Affairs and Forest Fire Act that we handed out here, we also contain at the back the latest amendments that were accepted to the Principal Act, the amendment of 2001, as well as those of 2005 that you in the Act booklet. The Act is, as you know, or as you might notice, is already almost 10 years in place. And since its promulgation, we have actually put in place measures to make sure that it gets rolled out. And I would also like to just point out that the whole Act is already implementable with the exception of Chapter 3, also which deals with the National Fire Danger Assistance System. Since we are still working on implementing the software that we got from the American Forest Service, So we are working very closely currently with the South African Weather Service to make sure that we implement that system, that will serve as anyone assisting for the livelihood of the current fire. So, but otherwise, the other sections of the Act are already in place. And then, in terms of the other sections of the Act, I can only just talk about Chapter 2, which is the Fire Protection Association, which are associations that are formed by landowners for purposes of predicting, preventing, extinguishing, and managing fire. These associations are registered by the minister, and today we managed to register 91 associations countrywide. And as I indicated, they submit business plans to the department outlining how they will go about, you know, predicting, preventing, and extinguishing fires in their areas of jurisdiction. And we are also putting in place measures to support these associations to make sure that they implement their business plan effectively. But even though we have these associations, we have had challenges here and there, some of which culminated in fire that we just experienced recently in Mpumalanga, Free State, Eastern Cape, as well as the Free State. And I'll just give a brief indication of the status with regard to fire that we experienced recently. That so far, according to our records, 22 confirmed deaths recorded as associated with the fire, and that as much as 100,000 hectares of forestry and commercial plantation, and as far as 22,700 hectares in Swaziland, and over 200,000 hectares of grazing has been lost so far. And there's also a loss of an as yet unknown number of stock and commercial game species and other species. Second, next, there's environmental damage, including soil erosion and the fires facilitating the spread of invasive alien plants. And again, four sawmills and as yet undetermined number of houses, buildings were damaged or destroyed. And of course, jobs were also affected, and loss of revenue, foreign exchange and revenue from value added industrial options. These are some of the losses that we so far have been recorded in respect of the fire. As I indicated, assessments are still being carried out to determine the exact conclusive extent of losses that were experienced as a result of this fire. And as the next step, which is something that I just talked about, is that we are in the process with the facilitation of the National Disaster Management Center, and this is done by provinces, to assess what steps need to be taken to normalize the situation, to identify priority interventions required across three spheres of government and the private sector, and also in the process of quantifying the extent of damage incurred by all stakeholders. So this will be informed by the assessment that is currently being carried out by provinces, with the guidance of the National Disaster Management Center. And as I indicated, the two ministers of Water, Health and Forestry and the DPLG will give a statement next week, which will mainly advise the public in terms of measures that they should observe to make sure that, you know, we don't experience fire fires or increasing fire fires from the number that we've already encountered so far. And this community will actually cover about three aspects that could be elaborated further in terms of such activities. One is that people should take every precaution to avoid fires being started, which includes early outdoors should not be burned without permission. Secondly, cigarette butts should be extinguished in ashtrays or containers. And thirdly, open fires for cooking and warming should not be left unattended.
And he is particularly careful about using plants to smoke out hives, to get honey, etc. And then farmers, traditional leaders, and other relevant members should join the local fire protection association that has been formed, or have been formed in some areas. The second measure that the minister should communicate to the public is that fire should be immediately reported to the local authority or using the 107 emergency number, and that the speed of reaction towards fire is the most important factor in containing the damage. That's the message that will be put across. And secondly, that accurate information on the exact location of the fire helps to ensure quick response. Thirdly, false alarms can take limited resources away from real fires and can cost a lot of lives and property. This would mainly imply that the public should not, you know, activate false alarms around fires. Then the third aspect that will be communicated to the public is ensure that you plan for your own safety, which revolves around the need to ensure that wildfires, because wildfires cause panic, one can be easily disoriented, and plan for what you will do should you be confronted with a wildfire. Make sure your families know what to do, especially the children. Again, it is important for the public to fireproof their homes, especially by removing flammable materials from around their homes, including invasive alien plants, long grass, dead leaves, branches, overhanging home space. There's a number of measures that are being proposed in respect of this, and we'll be in a position to capture that clearly in the presentation that will be sent to the committee soon. So this is in terms of the community that will be sent out by the ministers, and of course the report data on fire that has been experienced recently. But there are also other ongoing measures, Chair, that I would just like to share with you from, particularly from legislation association point of view. I made mention of the fire protection associations that we so far managed to register, 91 in total countrywide, and the National Fire Danger Rating System that we are in the process of implementing. And we also have a policy on enforcement and compliance and enforcement that we are currently rolling out to members of the public to make sure that they comply with the requirements of the Act and in terms of Chapter 5, 6, Chapter 4, and 5, etc. Around state of readiness for fire fighting as well as fire break. So we are running campaigns to members of the public around that. And another aspect is around cross-border fire management. This revolves around engaging our neighbors, our neighboring countries of Botswana, Lesotho, Swaziland, Mozambique, Namibia, to actually try and come up with agreements in terms of management of cross-border fires, as well as, you know, exchange of information or best practices for fire management. And we would like to report that we managed to consult all these countries that I've listed. We started off with Lesotho last year, and our negotiations were so successful, we managed to sign MOU July this year, and we will now be starting to discuss operational strategies for fire management, cross-border fire management, and fire management expense program. And Swaziland, we also had meetings with them. We now circulated the draft MOU. They are busy considering the MOU, and we hope to have it signed by the two ministers in the near future. And according to our target, we were hoping to sign this financial year or calendar year. Sorry, calendar year, not financial year. But there appears to be some delays on the side of Swaziland, and we are following up with them. We are envisaging signing before end of the financial year. And then Mozambique, we also circulated the MOU after two meetings that we had with them. And they are in the process of, you know, subjecting the draft MOU to their legal processes. And they indicated that as soon as the draft is approved from their side, then we will be in a position to arrange for the signing of the MOU. Botswana, we had a meeting with them last week, and we also managed to agree on areas of cooperation. We will be circulating the MOU to them during the course of this week, and we also hope to sign with them during the launch of the Kalahari Trans-Frontier project in, that will involve Botswana, Namibia, and South Africa. If we are not able to sign during that time, then we'll possibly identify another date. We also had a meeting with Namibia's chair, and we agreed on areas of cooperation on fire management, and they are also considering the draft memorandum of understanding, and we are awaiting feedback from them so that we could sign and start engaging on practical issues around fire management. And the very last two aspects is around the Working on Fire assistance from the Working on Fire program. We indicate that this program is really doing an incredible work in terms of integrated fire management, and we, as forestry section, we have a very good relationship with the program in terms of assisting us on a number of aspects, one being on advocacy and awareness, whereby the campaigns that we run around FireWise or FireWise awareness are done jointly with the program, and we are deriving sufficient benefits from that. And also around FPA support, Fire Protection Association support, we work very closely with the Working on Fire program. And of course, on actual firefighting, the forest sector, including our own forestry, commercial forestry side, we are benefiting a lot from that program. So there's really a very good relationship with them. And lastly, the National Disaster Management Center also, we have a very good relationship with the center in terms of supporting us in fire management issues. As I indicated, the assessments that are now being carried out in the provinces that were affected by this fire are done under the auspices of the National Disaster Management Center. We really have a very good relationship with them. Therefore, I'll send the web on the presentation and send it through as a matter of urgency, and I thank you for your attention.
Thank you very much, everyone. I think with the volume of information that we have received, let's just take a quick break and then we come back and then we engage on all the reports that we have received. Can we do a sort of 6 minute break so that we have enough time to discuss the options? Yeah, 8 minutes has worked. Be back again. I don't think we would restrict you from asking questions first on Working for Fire and then on Working for Water. I think feel free to engage on whichever part of the report that you want to start with. So can I invite, who will be the first one that would like to? Honorable Aaron Kay is not here, something must take over his number one. On his way to the rugby, the World Cup rugby. Ron? Yeah, that's where he is. Manana? Thank you, Chairperson. My first question is directed to the head presenter. Thank you very much for the information that you have provided us. You know, with regard to the issue of Mpumalanga, 2 years ago, we visited Mpumalanga as a portfolio committee, and it was led by Comrade Aronson.
Can we have a bit of order in Limpopo?
The issue of the exit strategy was raised very sharply. After 2 years, this is
sees some progress in Pumala. I don't know whether really the department is taking this matter very seriously. And people around that area, they are really, they are fed up now because it seems that this is corruption. I will request that there's a question that I'm supposed to ask the minister from those people with regards to this issue. I will appeal that the department can look at this issue once and for all. The second question was with regards to the second question is with regards to the issue raised by the one who was presenting the 1245. He talked about cancer. I didn't understand it very well. If you can just repeat that, what is it? What is this alien that are causing cancer and what are they?
Thank you, Chairperson. Mine is on draft. I just want to find out if the department is having any plan to deal with the issue of the delay of payment of the employee of the Working for Water. They raised it when we were in Gauteng province that it takes 2 to 3 months to get their pay. The second one is on the issue of the second quarter training plan. I just want to find out why the SANTAX is not having this second quarter training in other provinces. And the third one is
sorry that I came late. I was held up somewhere else. But maybe I haven't benefited from the beginning in the presentation. And that I'll ask here may appear very irrelevant depending on what came before my coming here. But what I would like to have clarity on is this alien plant. There's an effort to eradicate them. But I would like to find out from the presenters what sort of suggestion they have with regards to the eradication of alien plants, because they seem to be catching up all over and they're becoming a problem all the time. And the second issue would be on the challenges that face them with regards to the being involved in the manufacture of coffins. The challenge from my side arises as a result of the undertakers. Don't they take up issue with you on this particular thing? Because you, according to them, should be depriving them of their livelihood if you sort of lower the prices of coffins that have been manufactured by the unemployed people. Those are the two issues. things that I would like to have.
Thank you very much, Chair Person. I will take this opportunity to also congratulate our for the team that has just given a very good presentation to us. So my question is with regard to especially post to the DDG with regard to the waiting for water. Jobs breakdown. It was indicated that a total of 1,700 people are employed for working for water. But I just wanted to find out from her as to whether is this total number of all the people employed across the country, or is this number based on certain provinces and other people from other provinces are not included. Yeah. And another thing is with regard to the challenges that the Waiting for Water program is faced with. I just wanted to also to find out with regard to the contractors that they are employing people as to whether. For those contractors to employ people, are they having the guidelines that they are using to remunerate people and also to train those people that are working there? If that is the case, and I'll request them maybe to expand it on that one. And the other one has been posed by Honorable Edith Tell. Thank you very much.
I thank the presenters for their fine presentations. Under challenges, of course, we have several of them. What one would like to know, is there a plan that we have that we could overcome these challenges? It is there, but now one does not, one hasn't got a picture, or there's no president to say, well, on skills development, this is our program, and this is what we're going to do. In each of these, let's take, for instance, I just want to finally, under the question of handover policy to the landowners and municipalities. Now, what could you tell us? Could you throw more light on this matter? Because it's not very clear to me. On the question on way forward, again it says to fill in very critical posts to improve MNE capacity. Now, these posts, when were they, when are they going to be filled? And what are these posts? What do they cover? Because if they're critical, that means it is very important that we have these posts filled so that work could be carried out. Because the question of all around, we do refer to capacity, and capacity is lacking. And it is lacking because we haven't got the personnel to fill in the different posts. Now, coming here, the other point is about the rollout, about ABET training plan. Now, there again, you simply say rollout. Is there a plan to carry out ABET? Now, I think you'll agree with us. According to statistics, I can just tell you about KZN. There are more than 2 million people who are illiterate. And I think generally countrywide is something like 8 to 9 million. And I think this is a very staggering figure. Now, let us take this sector. Now, I think we can carry out ABET at the workplace. At the workplace. We should look at that. You know, after work, I mean, some of us, we went to night classes and so on. So we should consider that. Of course, the question of transport and other things come up. But that means the state should be able to provide the transport to see that workers or those who are involved in ABET are taken to the place of residence. Coming to the question of invasive species, I think a very disturbing but also a big challenge that we face. And it is frightening, the picture that Guy has presented this morning. What would happen if we do not take very drastic steps to overcome this? Now, what one would like to suggest, I think this program, Committee Chair, I think it should go before the executive, because the executive ought to see this. I do not know whether such a program has been presented, because this is not only South Africa, but you look at the whole of the SADC countries and the world as such. And I think it is very important that we should impress upon our minister to see that this report, and if Guy could present this report to the executive, and I think it's very important. Now, coming to the question of timber, the sawing and the cutting of timber, you know, these big huge trees that you cut and you refer to offcuts. Now, I think that is also job creation. Now, of these offcuts, we could make small tables, small chairs, and that could be a small scale industry. It is very important. I worked in the timber industry in the 40s. Now, they don't need very fancy furniture. I mean, can you imagine in the rural areas, how many of our people even got little benches to sit on? Now, I remember when I look at our own background, we didn't have chairs. We sat on the floor, or little stools. Now, here is an industry for you. So, that is something that we could do. Now, coming to the funeral, I think a service is becoming a multi-billion rand industry in our country. Well, you know the reason. Now, the question of coffins, I think it's important that we should examine this, and I think that industry can grow. Yes, there are people with big undertakers, dozen people like that. Well, they want to have fancy coffins, right? Those who want to have fancy coffins are fine. But I myself personally, if I could just take a half a minute, I told my family that most certainly I wouldn't want such a coffin, but I want a simple, plain box coffin, just like the coffin in which our late General Secretary of the Communist Party, Comrade Sowell, was buried. Just very ordinary. But they protested. I said, no, I'm going to put it in my will, because the thing is this, that why must we have those fancy coffins? Okay, those who want to have it, the rich can do that. But I think for the poor, that is the solution, because of the large number of deaths in our country, and when we overcome HIV and AIDS and so on. So I think those are the things that we look at. And finally, I think on the question of the fire aspect, about that too, I think it is interesting. But what I think comes here is this, that in each of these, let me say the last point, I'm just digressing for a moment. All these things what you stated in regard to the timber, the industry, is very heartening, because I think the progress has been made. So I think we should build on that, and to see that you talked about, there's always financial constraints. Now we must see to it that you sit on the fiscus. Can you sit on the fiscus? I don't know. But if you can sit on them, to see that you get a little more money. Thank you.
Thanks, Mr. Mayor. My question will revolve around fire and water, but let us go to, first of all, let me start with the municipality. Their disaster management plan. Does DWARF assist, you know, with the crafting of these plans? Do you perhaps ensure that your strategy for both water and fire, you know, sort of relate to the develop. What are you doing about that? And another point is regarding the invasive alien plants. Some of them are rather very attractive and beautiful. Is it the fact that some of us, you know, do buy these, you know, from nurseries, unknowingly assisting in the spread thereof? Because when you go to a nursery, you just look at this beautiful plant and you buy it and assist in propagating it. In the legislation, I'm not sure. Are there means whether you know these nurseries to prevent it from, if at all, this is a fact. I'm not saying that I'm stating a fact here. And then the impact of wildfires on rare indigenous plants. Is there a fear that, there is a fear definitely, that some of these indigenous plants could be lost permanently? Well, what is their capacity to rehabilitate themselves? Let me rest it there. And lastly, with regard to the Fire Protection Association, the question that I asked glad to know that there are 91 of these in the country. The point is, there was a challenge in the past in terms of delay to register. There's a meeting that I attended, you know, of farmers, where they complained that it took like forever to get their registration application, you know, approved. Is that challenge still valid as we speak now? Thank you very much.
Kandeka, you know, I was so excited the way you came up with the whole thing on working for water. But when it came to challenges, the first one, inadequate answer, there it comes. Then you went down to capacity, constraints, and clear communication and other aspects. There it goes down, my beautiful dream. It was so exciting until it came to that end. What part of it is when it came to capacity aspect? Father, can I scream? Because it's always the case. You know, you get everything, but you never end up at... You know what we want to see? Is that what is it that we then, as the committee, should do? You give all of this a report. But then you are not saying anything at the end. What is the problem? What is it that is not working? What have you tried that can say you want the committee as it's sitting here to intervene and to see that at the end of the day, one day we'll have reports without challenges, and the challenges will then become positive reports and saying, you know that we have all of those challenges, now we have overcome them, we are where we are today. I mean, that is what we are expecting. We are not just a committee to listen and do nothing. We want to know what is it that you think you want us to do. Then it came to the gentleman that said all of those spaces that you were talking about, in the invasive spaces. One is that they are there. You have even given an example of HIV and AIDS and other illnesses that attack or kill people, that it is the same like that. But we know that if you are HIV positive, you have to prevent having an unprotected sex so that you don't get AIDS. You can live long with it. What is it that you as our department is doing to see to it that much as they are there, if you then can't get rid of them immediately, but they are not going to cause problems to anything or anybody else? And also, what is it that the department has tried so far? Has the department undertaken any comparative studies to guide how other countries have dealt with it? And whether are there any indigenous knowledges
regarding this species. Is there anything that you think has been done so far? Because they have been all around all the time. Last chapter, when on the 10th of August, I was with the minister in the Northern Cape. There was a launch of something about the women there, and after that they took us to the dam to look at all of the things. But they have created jobs with these things. There are people that are trained. Others are pulling it with a boat, the small boat. They pull it outside from the dam. They bring it up to the end of the dam. Then others are waiting from there, taking them out of the water, outside. Others are taking them from there and pile them up. It has become a job creation, and for the youth mostly, they are working on this. Much as they are dangerous, what is it that we are then doing at the end? If they are such dangerous species, what are we doing? Can't we create jobs out of them, or do something that is going to, at the end, work positive for us? Thank you.
And then followed by
Mahati. Thank you, Chair. I have just a few concerns here. Working for water. Every year we know that around Cape Town in winter, rain is going to fall. And in my low fells that side, in summer, rain is going to fall. And the rivers are going to be flooded. The water runs down to Mozambique. We know the story that a lady gave birth on a tree. What is actually waiting for water doing to conserve a lot of water in order to reduce the amount of water flowing to Mozambique? Has Waiting for Water ever thought of building more catchment, like the catchment we see when you're on a flight going to Johannesburg, just around it? You see each and every farmer having a catchment. We have rivers, we have gorges and so on that side. It wouldn't it be a job creation if we engage people in the area to have a catchment project? And then let me come to working for fire. The same thing happened. We know that where there is grass, there must be fire. When the grass is dry. And when we have these plantations, definitely we know that a lot of plantations are going to be destroyed by fire. But we keep on taking a risk of making it possible for fire to destroy. Why? Because we don't take any measure to prevent. Has this Working for Fire taken any research? Say, some of the chemicals perhaps which could destroy grass so that fire cannot spread out. What measures, preventive measures, have fire, Working for Fire taken in that respect? Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I want you to tend to this, like you are saying, Working for Water. When I go through these three sentences, I get worried.
you are saying to develop policies, strategies, and plans for effective and efficient implementation. When are you going to start? You are going to develop. When are you going to start, or have you started? Because if you would be saying we are continuing to develop, well, then it would make sense out of it. But if you say you are just developing, you are going to develop, I have maybe to ask more questions. But in any case, maybe at the end of it all, you are saying, given the strategic priorities of program plans to take the program to higher level will be accelerated. Maybe you have already started, I might have missed out on that, but I would like you to sort of clarify me. Thank you.
On working for water job breakdown, I understand there are problems here with 0%. I would like which challenges are they facing in this problem? Okay, let me just add to the questions that the members have asked, and some of my questions arises out of the oversight visits that we have done around the country also. You, on the working for water, from the provinces that we've gone to, we don't see, the same vibrancy that maybe is at the national level on working for water. And we think unless we change that balance, the problem will sit in Pretoria all the time. It's only in Pretoria that they're concerned about the working for water, if I can call it like that. We would want to see and the same urgency felt wherever we are. So when we meet with municipalities, they get very shocked when we ask them, what is your working for water program? We don't see that. When we talk to MECs and so on, they think that it ends with only eradicating the buckets and making sure that we reach the targets on the provision of water. So I think, in addition to the question that one or two of the members have asked, to what extent have we been able, when we talk about cooperative governments, been able to devolve the real people that we are relying on to be involved? We're asking this because I remember very well, Honorable Arendse asked the last time that you are relying on outside funding most of the time for this program. If you look at DWAF's own strategic plan for this year, you won't find money in there for working for water. You don't find money in there for working for fire. The question then is, do you rely on the Department of Public Works to be doing that? And if that's the case, that you are relying on the Department of Public Works, to what extent then are you able to, because then it means that the committee must have nothing but DWAF only. We must have a joint meeting with the Department of Public Works if that's the case. We obviously need to do oversight. Where's the money? That's where we go to find, because it's not going to help if we talk to you alone. I think it will help if you clarify that for us, because we will continue to say that where's your capacity, but why are you not? We don't see these things in your strategic plan and budget. How we do that? We're secondly asking this, and I was hoping Honorable Masala, you would have asked this. We're asking this because, again, as we go around the country and take pride in the work that the Working for Fire is doing, and in the instances where, they've done the Working for Water program, I agree with a member that said that, but the thing of the exit strategy is not appreciated. And then when you engage the actual Working for Fire people that are there, well, of course, one of the reasons why we have an extended public works program in the country is so that we develop skills and we do something about poverty, we do something about unemployment in the country. the difficulty that you see coming out of the Working for Water, Working for Fire program in relation to that is, first of all, the payment that is there is low. So it means that as soon as they hear there's a job for them that are paying much more, pick and pay, off they go. You then allow a person with wonderful skills that you have given to go off elsewhere. How do we sustain that? How do we make sure that that doesn't happen? Well, of course, it would be great if you can have a situation where we do something about the payment. But I think the payment thing is going to change if you change what is the focus now of the program. So in short, my question is, do you really think that in both instances, the purpose as to why we started the work, both programs, is still relevant? I think that it's relevant in relation to having both the programs around, because we must clear alien invasion in the Working for Water instance. On the Working for Fire, this year again has taught us that unless we have that program in place, so I don't think it's just extended public work anymore. There's a need and there's a necessity in the country to have a permanency around both of these. And if that's the case, if DWARF approaches it from that point of view, then it means you will put it in your budget and give money to this. So we want to persuade the department that we think that the focus needs to change. We don't think this is an add-on anymore. South Africa is sitting like some other countries with the same problem of fires, for all the reasons that you have said, and therefore can't just be a little extended public works anymore. South Africa is sitting, if you look at all the slides that were given, and if we look around, we're going to continue sitting with alien invasion. But the question is not just alien invasion, it's about our water resources. So of course, if we want to do something about our water resources and make sure that we have more water, I saw this article in the newspaper this morning that says by 2025 we won't have any more water. Now of course, there's lots of speculations all over by when are we not going to have water or what. So we want to argue to the department, and we'd like you to come back to us and say, do you really think these are just add-ons? The more we think about add-ons, the more we're not going to get the bigger picture. The more we're not going to get to the urgency that you so eloquently argue, Guy, on how we need to approach it. So the argument is, we think that there needs to be a change in the approach, because we really are impressed about what we've seen on the Working for Fire, Working for Fire people around the country, dedicated young men and women that really. And secondly, we want to argue on their behalf also of these dedicated young men and women that we've got to do something about the skills development program a little bit more. The last one that we saw, Honorable Mosala, again, I was hoping you were going to say this. The last one that we saw is, you know, they're now starting to integrate a lot of other little things. So they don't sit there idle, wait for a fire. They do other little things. How do we do a little bit more of that? How do we make sure that, because in that particular area, the fire danger rating is always high, in that area, these people are doing a lot of things. Again, in that same area, we heard that, you know, they were now extending their mandate. I can't remember, what was it, Honorable Mosala? They were helping, what was it? I think one of them assisted in somebody that gave birth also.
Yes.
And it's wonderful, you know, our argument is there are skills that these people are getting, and we don't think it's appreciated sufficiently, of how can we harness the skills that all of us have seen on our overtime visits when we meet with the Working for Fire people in particular. And therefore, we argue, we think there must be a shift. They are wonderful tools. I think that all the time. To talk about all of them. I have also become passionate about these Working for Fire people now. You know, they wanted to give me a fire drill. I was fine. My other members were not fine when we started the all of these other things. So I think that's the approach that I would want to take in there. Secondly, I think Comrade Mofati's question, if you can link this question towards, you told us at the beginning of the year when you gave us your strategic plan You told us with regards to fire you were going to be doing a lot of these things. But a lot of it is management things, you know, in your plan. It's a lot of management stuff. You know, you're going to have a memorandum of understanding. You're going to have this thing with America. You're going to be doing all of these things. What we don't hear in your program is, what are we doing on the ground? I'm afraid all the things that you have said with the minister is going to say, I don't see the budget for all of that stuff in there. So I think that we would be very happy that when those announcements are being made, it must be followed by money.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you don't have money for these things, then of course you can just, you can say all of these things. So I think what must clarify to us, are you now that you're moving towards putting together your new strategic plan and budget, are you taking a different view when it comes to working for water, working for fire, and fire in general? Because really, we've got to learn from this year that there are things changing. Climate change are forcing us to change, and therefore the budget must change, the strategic plan must change, and then also all the issues that the members have said in relation to that. So let me conclude by saying, we think in this area they must be a little bit more futuristic, other than there's a fire, let's run and go and blast a bush. I don't know what the English word was now. And then secondly also, when we think futuristic, we must think about sustainability. Last week when we had Dwarf here, they told us that, you know, the plans that they had, what did they come and talk to us about last year? Last week? Gave us a city, much our presentation, they didn't talk about emergency. They were supposed to. They spoke about stream flow, they were not supposed to talk about that. Whatever they said last week, it's a Sunday, I don't know. Whatever they said last week means that unless you link them together, around forestry, because how many hectares was just burnt? Gone. So your plans that you have, it's burnt, it's gone up into flames, and therefore the question of sustainability in there also. And I think lastly, the issue of water conservation, water shortages and so on. We really want to appeal to the department that we think it's the bigger picture that you need to get onto. There's other little things, because the Fire Act of 1998 is 10 years. We have 91 fire protection associations only. It can't be right. You know, it can't be right. After 10 years, we are still struggling. What is the problem with our people not wanting to start fire protection? We're not blaming Dwarf in this instance. It's incumbent on all of us to make sure there's a fire protection association where we live. So I think we would like to know, how do we put the act into its practical formation, other than, you know, some of these things? Do you have a target that says that it's 91 now, but it's going to be 991 shared by the time that we come back to report to you again next year? That in the municipalities we're going to be taking care of this responsibility that the Act says. And that we can say for sure, because currently the Working for Fire is taking on the responsibility of what the other parts of the Act is doing, because the other parts of the Act are not implemented. So I think we would like to ask, if you second, thank you very much for this little booklet, because it helps me also to quickly go through to see what have you implemented and what haven't you. So I think it will help, and this committee would want to come with you to have a, you know, a little public launch thing that says, it's summertime in Cape Town, it's high season for fires, let's have something. It's fire time in Free State, and so on. So that I think that we do much more than what we currently, not in addition, because you have all the stuff. You have all the stuff. We like these little things. We like these little things. We like, well, it's in Afrikaans, the other one. We like these things, but you see, we can't. It must be somewhere else. It must really be up there. There must be a board when you come into Parliament. You know, there must be a board that says this.
They must be at the drive up here. Because they are always quiet up here. You know, there is a guy. We don't know what happened to the case. He picked a cigarette butt out. It was a British guy. Don't know what happened to the case. But there is even a board up there that says these things. Let me stop there before I go on and on and on.
May I just ask whether they are also in other languages?
Yeah.
So that those countries, other languages?
Yes, the Afrikaans is a bit of groot here. It's with an undertale ook. Hmm, there.
Is
there Chair, thank you very much for the question. And as usual, I think the questions that the committee asked are questions that really make us think very deeply. Sometimes when we are involved in a program, it's very difficult to think out of the box. So the kind of questions that you are asking really are really prompting us to think in the right direction, and we do value them. Again, one couldn't help picking up for the emotion. Working for Water is one of those programs that I always say it has a heartwarming feeling, because it's a program that deals directly with poverty, not indirectly. It just deals directly with poverty. Its benefits are more than one benefit, looking at the resources, skills development, food security. You know, it has so many things in one program. And indeed, it is an important program. And you ask some good questions. How come we're still relying on external funding? It is something that we will have to consider. So may I say, before I cherry pick on the easiest questions, so that Guy and Dao can pick up on the difficult ones. Just as an introduction, one of the reasons why we felt as a department that we need to put this program as one of the president's priorities, it was because we really wanted it to receive the attention that it deserves. Unfortunately, the funding has been a real challenge. And we were hoping that if we listed as one of those programs, and fortunately, everybody is aware of the program and the benefits of the program throughout the country. So we're still hoping that we will be able to access additional funding. However, I've taken note of the suggestions coming from the committee with regards to how we could possibly address funding. First of all, how we could escalate the importance of the program presentation to the committee, and maybe the home of the program itself, so that it's not relying on funding from externally. You're raising very critical issues of integration. Currently, government is very busy looking at developing the poverty, anti-poverty strategy. We need as well to see how we can link up this program with those initiatives. There's also an initiative by the Deputy President, which I talked to, as well, we're playing a very key role there. And if you look at the strategy, you will see Working for Water featuring very prominently with regards to the contribution of the program. So we're trying all other means of drawing attention to the program so that it can receive funding. But of course, we're going to need assistance from the committee. The reason why the previous minister suggested that the program should stay with the department, because there were talks of, should it really be with the department? Should it go to this? Should it go to agriculture? You know, there were those kinds of debates. But I think she realized the strategic importance of the program and the link with it. We also need to look internally at the institutional arrangements for Working on Fire. You know, Working on Fire, should it be part of forestry? Should the Working for Water program be part of forestry? That's the questions that we are asking, so that we can improve on the effective management of the program. Coming to the questions, the challenge of the exit strategy, yes, we do accept that it has taken far too long, and I can add here. But can I just say that the latest, the latest, maybe talk about the source of the challenge. The fact that there wasn't a real policy that was speaking to the exit strategy for the program. We were guided, in the past, the program was guided by the policy of the ECWP program. So what we are looking at is the finalization of the policy, because the minister gave us an instruction to develop a policy that will be looking at it. And it means the challenges in Mpumalanga will still continue. However, we have put interim measures to say in the next 3 months we'll be exiting the people who are currently in the program, because Mpumalanga is one province where the strategy was just not acceptable to the people. So there are interim measures that we're putting in place. So we have to finalize this. So we do take the fact that it has taken far too long. Guys, there was a question that was asked about the analogy you made of a cancer, you know, and the alien and the alien species. I'm hoping that you'll be talking about. There was also a question that was asked with regard to delays in the payment of employees. We had a problem with the system initially at the beginning of the year, but that problem has since been resolved now, and I'm hoping that there aren't any delays any longer. It was a system-related problem. The training, Guy, I'm hoping that you will talk about it. But and all the other technical questions, what I would really like to address myself to are the strategic inputs that have been made by the committee. It means all the other technical questions that I've left will be picking up, and I will be looking at the funding issue, the funding. First of all, maybe Chairperson, we can welcome any suggestions coming from your side, because we really want to take this program to the highest level it can get to. The Northern Cape has developed a wonderful business plan. It is so well thought. And let me just say, I have tasked the program, working with the program leader here, who is very passionate, to look at how we can resolve this problem overall, to address all the issues that you have talked to address issues of industries, sustainable jobs, skills development, additional funding. So there is work that we're currently doing in that regard. And that speaks to the question that you asked about why are we talking about the policies. The policy development process is an active process, because you have to take into account developments that are coming into place. For instance, I've just mentioned that there's an anti-poverty strategy, and we would like this program to be part of that anti-poverty strategy. So it's a way of, you know, continuously improving the program, not to say we haven't developed programs. So we can really welcome suggestions on how, first of all, we can escalate to the appropriate levels the importance of this program, the strategic importance of the program, not only for the Department of Water, but for other departments as well, and for other functions. Mm-hmm. And mention was made of building of small dams, and you know, how that can contribute to poverty alleviation and prevent flooding. And at this point, I'm also tempted to say, we are currently, even though we are not ready to talk about it, we're currently working on a strategy that will basically answer the question, what should be the role of the Department of Water Affairs and Forestry in contributing to poverty alleviation and growth and development in the country? Because we believe we should be worried about how we can contribute, how we can make the sector contribute to job creation and poverty alleviation. And the examples that were made here of damming water, building small dams, are part of the initiatives of that strategy. And again, the Working for Water, the Working on Fire program should be pillars of that kind of strategy. So I will leave the other questions to my colleagues, to Guy and Dawood, to answer, and come in if necessary. But thank you for the input.
As you prepare to answer, I was just saying to the member you're next to me, Sandeka, I listened to your last talk. So I'm saying what I'm going to say to avoid that guy does not do it also. I am known for this black book that I have. So I always look at what you said last time, that you were here. Now, you see, all of you, if you're going to answer, it will help if you come and consult my notes. That's the last time, the following thing. Input strategy. Follow up. It said all these things, you know. So I do think to us, I don't want to stop you from saying anything further. But I think you've got to help us also to understand and appreciate. We accept these things are complex things. They're not just like fly-by-night stuff that you can just create right now. But you said all of it the last time, Sandeka. I can't find the page now, but it's in my head. What you said. So I do think you must, all of you must help us to say then, having said all of that the last time, what do we do this time now? Where are we at and where do we want to go? So I think that's really what we are interested in. Where do we want to go to after we have said all of these things and told the committee all of the stuff and put all the stuff in your plans and so on? What is it that are prohibiting us? Is it the funding thing? Because if it's the funding thing, then we think that, you know, there should be some engagement. We must see where do we put engagement. The committee doesn't have the power, then we must go talk to the Joint Budget Committee, press on them, and then start persuading the Finance Committee. We can't go to SCOPA because they want to know why we didn't spend the money. They're not going to help us. I think if you can help to walk us through those difficulties, because we don't think there are other huge problems. What is it? Why are we still saying the same thing a year later? Guy?
Thank you very much, Chairperson and members. I just want to make two quick general comments that have come up from, I think, some of the things that have been asked here. I think Working for Water internationally is seen as possibly the best program running in the world in this field. So whilst it's got enormous problems, challenges that we have to address, I think that's our job, both ourselves and our job, to focus on what can be done better. But I think we must put it in the perspective that at any conference that you go to where you talk about ecosystem services, where you talk about integrated approaches, Working for Water is held up as an international role model. And it really is a good program. You know, it's frustrating in many ways, but it really is a very good program. And the principles are really very, very sound. The Working on Fire program, I think, is regarded by many as the most efficient program that we have running right now. If you look at the cost per person day, 123 rand per person day, and over 50% of that goes into the pockets of the workers in terms of the benefits that they get. The efficiency of that compared to some of the other initiatives that we have in government is extraordinary. When you add in the aerial firefighting, it's still only 173 rand per person day. These are really, really good figures. And if you look at the budget, this year we have a budget, if we take in all the bits and pieces from KwaZulu and what have you, we have a budget of 80 million rand for this year, just over 80 million rand. The fires that Mbaka referred to, and Chairperson, I did send through to you the report from Forestry South Africa. They have estimated that these fires, just for the forestry industry, have caused damage to the amount, including downstream opportunities, of 3.7 billion rand, the worst fires in the history of the country. and recorded history of the country. And what the head of Forestry South Africa said too is that the problem probably would have been in the order of twice as bad were it not for the efforts of Working on Fire and its partners. Now, I mean, that's an extraordinary statement. He then said 1 billion, but actually he was saying 3.7 billion rand. But even if it's 1 billion rand, that would have been lost to the country were it not for these men and women doing the work they have. And we don't have time to go into the bravery and issues that are. I mean, we hear the stories, and it's important that you people hear them, but in a different way.
But I mean, the return on investment,
and that's just the forestry sector. I mean, the agriculture sector has been hard hit. People's lives have been lost. Houses have been burnt down. Jobs are lost. That would otherwise have been there. So just on the forestry sector, you know, for 80 million rand, if it's 1 billion or 3.7 billion or whatever, you don't get many returns on investment like this. And so before going into the things, just to say these are really very good programs, and I want to put Working for Wetlands in there too. I think we hugely underestimate the importance of this program and the importance of wetlands, including for water conservation measures, for water quality issues, for flooding issues, and things that are very much part of your interest as a portfolio committee. I'll try to go through as quickly as I can with the answers and with Mpaka. Mpaka, I think you must please just tell me when you want to pick up on each one. I'm sorry, I wasn't here when the issue of the cancer and invasives was raised, but it's just an analogy. I think cancer is probably the best analogy that I can think of the nature of invasions. It's something, not all alien things are a problem, first of all. So there's lots and lots of alien plants in this country, and they cause no harm at all. Most of the fruits and vegetables and what have you, they're alien to the country. It's when they become invasive that they can be a problem. Even there, the caveat is our timber industry is almost entirely based on invasive alien plants. And so it's when they're invading, almost, rather than when they're invasive, that is actually where they are a problem. But once they do start invading, then what is it that's going to stop them invading? And normally that will be availability of habitat, which is a function of the soil types of nutrients, of water, sunlight, things like this. And until it hits its threshold, it will continue to invade. And that's just like what is happening in a cancer patient, that until the cancer cannot spread any further, it is going to continue to impact on the body. And the body we're talking about here is our life support system. But unfortunately, what we have are many forms of cancer, all happening at the same time. Because although we're focusing only on plants here, you must remember that there are invasive animals. So the house crows that you see, with the dirty white neck at the airport, we are trying to kill them. We think that we might eradicate them completely. One of the worst invaders, bird invaders that there is in Africa, it has caused unbelievable disease and hardship up in Tanzania, Zanzibar, specifically, particularly bad, Kenya, other places. And then there are the microbes. And the microbes are actually probably the things that we are most scared of. All the diseases, the bacteria, and many of them, you know, are waterborne disease orientated things anyway. So it's not just the plants that we have to focus on. So the analogy of cancer was really that we could have a healthy body, but we do need to try to address this. And somebody asked, that if you have cancer, what you do with antiretrovirals or diet and safe sex and all the things that we know are related to that, what do we do with invasives? And I think it's precisely what Working for Water and its partners are trying to do. It's a combination of, and it also is the question that was asked on this suggestion to eradicate,
I mean, there are only limited things we can do. The best thing, of course, is to prevent anything coming in the first place. But many of you people travel a lot. You know that you can go out of this country and walk back into this country carrying a packet of seeds or something, and no one's going to stop you. So we have to get that right. You know, you go to New Zealand, and I'm sure, Chairperson, it's in your book because I use the example often, but if you go into New Zealand and try to take that through and don't declare it, and you'll get yourself a 30,000 rand fine straight away. No option for appeal. So we have to look at that. We have to look at early detection, rapid response. We have to look at the use of biological control agents, enemies of the invasive plants themselves, at chemical control, at environmental control, the use of fire. We're doing all these things. And I think we understand best practices pretty well. There was a question, and I will go through sequentially, but it relates to this. The person asking, you know, are we just developing our strategy? I think we've got a very good understanding generally of best practice. But there are things that undoubtedly we're not doing well enough. Early detection, rapid response is one of them. The high altitude things, particularly for water. Once you get these trees up in the mountains and you have to go and clear them, you know, you go up by helicopter, you have to camp out there, it's hugely expensive. If you have to hang down on cliffs and cut these things down, and I'm sure I gave you pictures of that before, where two of our working on for water high altitude people went to Inaccessible Island, and it took two of them 12 hours to kill 7 plants because they're dangling down 2,000 meter cliff. So I'll go on, but there are.
To the question, Garrett.
Okay. The delays in payment, there have been problems with delays in payments throughout this program, unfortunately, the history of this program. I think we have put in systems that are far better now, but it does rely on individual action, and I think what we are at the stage now where we're picking up individuals who are not doing so, but it is unacceptable that we can get paid on time, month in and month out, and poor people do not get always paid on time, and it's something I think all of us are very conscious of. The challenge to the manufacture of coffins, the undertakers, I think that is a valid concern. We are challenging effectively the business of undertakers, but we are quite prepared to work with ethical undertakers, and the ethics of this is around, and it's, in the end it's, you know, it's not working for water's decisions, but the ethics of this is if they are prepared to pass on the benefits to the poor, then they can certainly have access to the coffins that we are making. But if they are using it for profit, then that's out of line with what we have put forward as this program. But I also want to say many people are being buried in blankets. Many poor people. I'm sure most of you will know the kind of hardship that is going on in the rural areas and the poverty. And those are the people we're trying to target. In many cases, there aren't undertakers even operating in those areas. But I do agree that in the end, this is a potential conflict area and one where we have to be sensitive. What we want is an ethical funeral industry. I think government generally. Working for water jobs, there's a question about whether we have the jobs across the country, and this is a figure of 1,700, I think it was raised. I thought that was the working on fire figure. But in both cases, the program runs across the country. And what we're trying to do is focus on where do we get the best returns on investment by dealing with the invasives, and then looking obviously at the poverty and other issues that we need to deal with. But basically, we have to be driven by where are these plants, the different types of plants, going to cause the most damage, and how do we try to get on top of the problems. the contractors and the guidelines to remunerate, there certainly are guidelines, there are requirements, and if they fail to follow those, they will not continue as contractors. But we do have a problem in that the way in which contractors are selected needs to be tightened up, and we still tend to give far too many benefits to the contractors rather than the workers. So we're very much in favour of trying to have a more cooperative collective approach in the way that we do things. This is a difficult field. The training is provided by
half a working. Second. Half a second, please.
A big button?
Yes, but half a second left, guy.
Okay, well, I now to proceed. And strategy to overcome challenges. We do have a strategy, but it does need to evolve as anything does. Hand over policy to landowners. We certainly have that. But we do need to implement it and very much stop working on private land and rather give incentives to private landowners. Monitoring and evaluation posts, we do have those posts available. We've been looking to advertise and fill those posts. We think it's a very critical thing, and Sue and Deck, I'm sure that those posts will be filled soon. But you've got to have M&E, as you folks know very well. The ABET rollout, we've been trying to do ABET since we started this program. I don't think we've done it very well. I think we have a new person who's coming as our social development manager with a lot of energy and also, more importantly in a way, a lot of organizational skills, and I'm hoping that Sabisa will make the difference that we can in terms of workplace training around ABET. What will happen if it's left alone was a question I wrote down. Well, what will happen is what happens with cancer if you leave it alone. The static implications and the need to present to the executive, I do think that this is a worrying aspect. I think international law hasn't really been tested on this in the way that it could and should be. But we are impacting on other countries, undoubtedly, and they are on us, of course. The tables and chairs and things that could be made, very much so. We are looking at school desks at the moment. Sue and Deck, we're looking at private seats also being made. One of the big things that we could make is if we could put ceilings into the houses of poor people, it would reduce the peak demand for electricity and actually mean that we wouldn't need to build a 32 billion rand power station just by putting ceilings in the houses of poor people who don't have them. Now we need to get some help. The chairperson said that you want practical things. We need to get the energy people actually to start looking at the ramifications of their supply side approach to energy, because it's something I just can't begin to understand why we don't do something like this rather than just continue with building power station after power station or proposing to build. The coffins and the walls that you mentioned, we're very much trying to promote the simple coffins. Of course, it's a very very sensitive area. Archbishop Desmond Tutu is one of a number of people who have committed themselves to be buried in the basic coffins, and the whole thing of pushing wolves is something that, through the faith-based and other groups, we are advocating is an important way to go. And we will be formally launching the Eco Coffins program as soon as we can find a date that suits the minister and the NEC. DRAF, to assist with disaster management plans in municipalities in Parker. Do you want to? Okay, so you'll come back to that. Attractive invasive. Many of the invasives are attractive, but none of the nursery association is selling invasives. We do audits. And we've also got the pet shade that, so that hydrilla in the dam that I showed, that we're working now with the pet shade people to make sure that when they sell fish, the vegetation in the fish is not invasive. So we've had actually a very good response. Chairperson, you're indicating I must stop there. Should we answer the rest in writing?
If you can, it would assist. Unfortunately, we have to stop at 1 o'clock after lunch, and then we rush into the house again. Thereafter, we have to skip the Women's Parliament because of this meeting today. So I think it will help if you do that, but we want to make a suggestion to you in addition to that. And maybe we should just agree as we conclude this meeting, so that next time when we talk to each other again, we will obviously not say the same thing. So the first one we want to suggest to Dwarf is, as you are in the process of putting together your strategic plan and budget, we do think you've got to reflect in there. And show the committee a determination of what you are saying, that you want to get alternative funding other than international funding by demonstrating that in your budget. Because if it's not in the budget, you're just going to be saying the same things again. Otherwise, if you all know that they're going to continue to have a focused funder, then of course, it's not a focus. I mean, somebody that's really going to fund you for 10 years, then of course we won't talk about your budget. We appreciate the fact that they are competing other things in there, but we think they are urgent in it. That's the first suggestion that you want to do. The second one is we would like to be invited when you have the Trans-Frontier activity, and we're not sure if it's still in this year that you're going to do that, so that we participate and celebrate in your victories and important stuff. And then the other issue that we want to say, yesterday the Deputy President addressed us in the Women's Parliament. One of the things he said that they would want to do, or are going to do, or are doing already, he was talking about this weaving. And that comes out of your Walking for Water program. That comes out of your... So I think we must be quite passionately about it. So I think Dwarf must find us. Where does he come from? She obviously comes from it because of Dwarf. And how do we build on those things? There's a number of things that you said, that they are doing, particularly for women, in there. And she was talking about the water issues, she was talking about those things. And so I think we must piggyback on that and see how do we expand it, because if it's reached the Deputy President's program, it's good news, which is lovely. We were shaking hands there when she mentioned all these things. And then we want to suggest further also that we would want to make an input into the department, and we should maybe provide from our part, from Parliament side, ask our research to do something on providing you on avenues where we think we need some strengthening, particularly from the legislative point of view and from policy point of view. Because those two are strengths and money will should follow. So we would want to do that in addition to what Dwarf is doing. Of course, we appreciate if Dwarf has started to work on something, it will help us also to see, which direction we are taking, and would welcome if you could share some of your documentation in that regard. And then lastly, we would want to conclude by saying that we do think we must talk a little bit more about the communication strategy in both instances. We don't hear the lack of communication. We think you must, the strategy that the Department of Minerals and Energy has started, Dwarf is in the same boat as them. The fact that they get pick and pay to say that they're going to be doing all of that stuff. Dwarf don't need to pay for all of these things. You must ask the private sector to be doing all of these things and talk to them to see
to be doing the similar one. We must have a program about this alien invasion. What do we need to do about the fires? And we must exploit the, you know, the different media and what other forms. So we would like Dwarf to tell us about the communication strategy, what is in there, and when it's going to start. Because we think then we're taking some of the things at least forward in what we are saying. I think we have spoken about the policy stuff, and we shall leave it there. Thanks to say, thank you very much, honourable members. Thank you very much. We agree that the outstanding process they will put forward and sponsor for the report. But that is, we also agree that we will continue to communicate with each other and focus more on this aspect, because the committee has said to their hearing that we want the program to be changing in the way that we will be asking them to the